Welcome to Important Not Important. My name is Quinn Emmett.
And I'm Brian Colbert Kennedy.
Teddy is not joining us today. He declined to come to work. So
sick day. We're not paying him for this, right?
I think it's more of like a personal mental health day.
That's fine. That's fine. Take what you need, Ted.
Yep. This is episode 23 with Josh Basham. And we asked the question, assuming it hasn't happened by the time this publishes, which fucking entirely possible, can we predict the next big earthquake, Brian?
Well, you'll have to listen to find out because his answer was actually very interesting.
A little more complicated than we thought, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I like the part where he told us we're going to be roasted like marshmallows.
He did. He said it a couple times. Also, the phrase crushing death was said a lot.
As if that's a specific, I guess that is probably specific terminology.
It just sounds so terrible.
Add that to our vernacular. But yeah, elevators, you know, here's the thing. Take the stairs. Great for your heart.
So good.
Great for your legs. You're not stuck in a box with your farting coworkers.
Yeah.
You're also not stuck in a box being roasted
with
like a marshmallow.
Melting coworkers.
Could save your life in an earthquake in so many ways.
I honestly take the stairs all the time, unless I'm going somewhere very, very tall. I really choose it.
I can see that from your athletic fitness.
Thank you very much. This is a really good one. Very good one.
And I hope so, because it might have been our last one.
Might have been our last
one. I'm kidding.
No.
This is our last one together before I split to the East Coast, which is how we did our first few, right?
That is true.
Which, I've never listened to those. No.
No, they were fine.
Anyways, I won't see you for a couple months.
A couple months.
Yeah.
It happens every year.
Won't see Teddy.
And I hate it.
Makes me feel a little unhinged. But hey, you know, life's good. Like, everything's fine.
Come on, you're going to have a great time.
It'll be good.
We'll Skype. We'll Google Hangout. I just want to see your face.
Fucking Skype. Hey, by the time this comes out, we're probably well past the primaries in California.
Yes.
A number of scientists, Jess Phoenix, and doctors and others were possibly still running for office in California's weird election system. Man, sending good vibes their way. Hopefully some of them left.
Seriously.
We are talking about the future, but hopefully.
All the best vibes.
Speaking of elections and earthquakes places to live.
Uh-huh. I know where this is going.
It's a great segue. One positive of living on Asgardia, in Asgardia, undefined, wherever that might end up
both
being,
on and in work.
No earthquakes.
No earthquakes. Impossible.
Well, that's what I mean by hasn't been defined. I mean, on a space station, sure, you're straight. If you guys settle on some sort of moon or planet, who fucking knows?
Absolutely, but Asgardia is an orbiting satellite.
Oh, that's 100% established.
I'll double check. I will double check on that.
And where is it orbiting? What planetary body?
Well, currently in its beginning stages, it's orbiting Earth.
Beginning theoretical stages. It's not there.
Theoretical stages. But once complete, Asgardia will be, it will never be landing anywhere. It will be in space.
Uh-huh.
There are no plates smashing into each other under the ground. Uh-huh. We have to watch out for alien attacks.
Right.
Obviously.
I was going to say, so other threats, go.
Certainly, I would say number one is probably just like collapse of the society that was probably poorly constructed.
Sure. Maybe something to do with their fabled monetary system.
Yes. That's going to be a tough one. And then sort of more excitingly is alien attacks for sure, I would imagine. But we're going to have some sort, we citizens of Asgardia, are going to have some sort of anti-alien, you know, defense system with lasers and...
maybe like build a wall.
And there'll be some walls. Yeah, there'll be some walls. Come on, man. I haven't looked at the website in a while. I'm not sure what's up.
This is sounding basically, I think it was season 4 of Battlestar. I think this is just, you're just describing what happened.
Got it.
That's great.
I'll keep you guys abreast.
Thank you. Hey, folks, we're doing pretty well, man. We are somehow a fucking top 100 podcast.
So insane.
Some of the time, which is crazy. We're top 10 science and medicine. We don't like to toot our own horn, but hey, if it helps more people find us and we can.
Yes.
Send some more action and activated folks like you out in the world. Fuck yeah, man. We are bootstrapped here. We don't have a big any advertising budget. We should get Teddy like a t-shirt for when we walk him.
That'd be so great.
You ever tried to put like a shirt or a sweater or something on a dog? First of all, don't, because it's dumb.
Seems like a terrible idea.
Second of all, a lot of times they just stand there because they don't know what to do.
I was going
to
say, yeah, my experience is with cats, but it's the same thing. They just don't move, as if somehow they are, all their limbs are, yeah, unmovable now.
You know what would be great is if all cats were immovable and couldn't move.
You're a monster for saying that. A monster.
Anyways, we are growing entirely because listeners like you are sharing us with your friends. Not in a sexual way. I would have remembered that.
We would have remembered that.
Yeah. What I mean is, share us with your friends. Forcefully, if you have to.
Take their phones out of their hands.
Uh-huh. Just take them right out. They can click on, you can click right on Apple Podcasts. Nothing is weirder. P.S. Side note.
Yeah.
Even like my wife, you take someone else's phone and you are confronted by their home screen and how they've arranged their apps. And your first thought is always like, this is madness.
This is specifically for you though, because you are the most OCD person I know.
Oh, it's not good. It's not good. I'm just like, why would you do this?
I saw yours today and I was blown away.
It's upsetting.
Because of all of it. It's too much.
No. It's organized in a very systematic way.
Well.
Anyways, here's the key though, which most people don't do. They fucking flip through the screens. They dig into a folder, pull down or cut to the left, search box.
Type in
podcasts, or if you use CastBox or Pocket Cast or Overcast or Stitcher or whatever the fuck, search important, not important.
We're everywhere.
Just click on subscribe. And to be clear, just remember, we're still talking about you holding your friend's phone.
Yeah.
You took it, maybe they went to the bathroom
or
something else. And then Brian, when they're like, hey man, what are you doing on my phone? You had a security update.
It's a thing, for your safety.
Hey, Dave, you're welcome.
Stop being such a dick, Dave.
You're welcome. It's a security update. And I'm trying to protect you because Russia.
It's always Dave. He always thinks you're doing weird shit with his shit. We're just helping.
I'm trying to take care of you. Right?
But seriously, do that. That would be so great.
Anyways, make him feel bad about it. It, it works every time.
Every time.
Okay, so speaking of feeling both really good about yourself, he's so positive.
Yeah, he really was. It's because he's trying to make a really good, change in the world.
Yeah, that guy. Let's go talk to Josh.
Smash him, bash him?
Yeah, let's go. Our guest today is Josh Basham. And together we're going to ask kind of a crazy question about earthquakes. Assuming it doesn't come like right now, are we maybe going to be able to predict the big one? Josh, welcome.
Hey, thanks for having me, Quinn. Appreciate it.
Very glad to have you. Josh, tell us real quick who you are and what you do.
Sure. So I'm founder at Early Warning Labs and principal investigator on our official partnership with the U.S. Geological Survey, which is part of the Department of the Interior.
Awesome.
Very cool, man. Wow. And how did you come on that? What made you go like, fuck earthquakes, man?
That's a great question. You know, and it really comes from my passion in disaster preparedness and emergency management. I was involved as a volunteer for over 7 years teaching a curriculum called the Community Emergency Response Team through FEMA and then later the Citizen Corps. So it was through the federal government. It was the official federal program where we actually train and qualify volunteer search and rescue teams to become federal assets in the event of disasters. And I learned so much about disaster preparedness and mitigation and morbidly, you know, where to find bodies in earthquakes and things like that.
Sure.
And I realized the value of being able to, you know that an earthquake is about to happen, even if it's just a minute or so.
Sure. Man, yeah.
That's wild.
And it makes you, I assume, go like, well, wait a minute. Could we crack this thing?
Yeah. Shouldn't we be trying?
Exactly. Exactly. And
that's
we
awesome.
Were very fortunate to be, introduced to the smartest minds in earthquakes, the U.S. Geological Survey, Caltech, and UC Berkeley. They had been working for almost 30 years to try to find a way to implement an earthquake early warning system here in America. And we just happened to get in touch with them right as they were ready to commercialize it.
That's awesome, man. Well, we're going to dig into that for sure.
Yeah. Let's get it going here. Let's set up our conversation for today. Our listeners are action-oriented people. They get shit done. Mm-hmm. And so we want to make sure that we're asking questions that aren't just super interesting, but also provoke action. And we'll do that throughout the whole conversation today so that we can build to some specific steps that they can take to stop earthquakes with their bare hands.
That's not good. Because that's what you do. From what I understood, that's where we're going.
I assume that's what we'll get the answer to at the end of this. Yeah.
Perfect. Perfect. So, Josh, we start with one important question to get the heart of why you're here today. So instead of saying, tell us your life story like everybody else, we make things difficult on ourselves and a little bit on you. And we like to ask, Josh, why are you vital to the survival of the species?
In the next big earthquake, the big one, right? Anywhere from 10 to 20,000 people could die. And there could be 50,000 injuries. With earthquake early warning properly implemented, we can prevent roughly half of that.
Wow.
And if in this career I save just one life and make one less person that our first responders, whether volunteer or professional, have to rescue or save, then it's worth it.
Wow. Well, that continues the streak of people on the podcast that are better people than us.
Way, way better.
Jesus.
Unbelievably better.
Good I mean, come on. We got to stop asking this question. One time I'm just going to ask Brian and see what happens.
Oh, man.
That was deep. It was very deep.
Well, you know, we don't want to put you on the... you know, it's funny, man. We've gotten a lot of really awesome constructive criticism and input from some really great conversationalists in America, which is we feel honored and lucky to have. And, you know, they vary on how to build your questions and when to ask them and what kind to ask when and how to ease a guest in versus kind of jump-starting things, this and this. And this is one I just feel like we've had some fun with. We've had answers ranging from like, I'm not, you're an idiot, to one like that, which is so composed and makes me feel like, boy, I gotta look in the man in the mirror and make some changes.
Well, look, you know what, Quinn, actually one of the biggest challenges that we have right now is public education, right? So any opportunity we can have discussions like this on, you know, whether it's a news story or a podcast, I mean, you're doing a big part of getting people just familiarized and know that this technology is there so they can actually do something with it, right? So it's you're an integral part of this, and I appreciate that.
All right. Easy.
Yeah.
Easy.
Quinn, look you back in the mirror. Give yourself a big thumbs up.
You know, there's a reason. Josh asked if this was a visual podcast video. I was like, God, no. Nobody wants to see the video of me just going to town on this croissant over here right now. All right. So as described to you before we get going, we're going to set up some context for this question. That means it's time for a segment because we're not original. We've titled Context 101 with Professor Brian. This one will be, sometimes they're super factual or historic or really nerdy. Sometimes they're a little more philosophical. Today's earthquakes, I look forward to being proven wrong. I can only assume most of Brian's earthquake research is based on repeated viewings of Christopher Reeve flying around the world in the original Superman
movie.
So
good.
It's still the best comic book movie, to be clear.
It's incredible.
However wrong the science may have been.
Doesn't matter. You know, it's fantasy.
Easy. Okay. Get going.
Here we go. I mean, earthquakes, they're the worst. Fuck them. Am I right?
Sure. Good start.
All of the rest of the natural disasters, we see them coming, right? Like, I mean, they're certainly awful.
Right. Well, yes. Yeah. to an extent.
To an extent. Hurricanes, fires, tsunamis, volcanoes, tornadoes. We have some sort of warning, and it totally varies. Uh-huh. You know, hurricanes a week to a day, depending on how they change course. Down to tornadoes, which just come up almost out of nowhere and bail right down the goddamn block. But like, here's a little bit of, there's a few minutes at least, and they're horrible.
Sure.
And they kill a ton of people.
Right. This is, it sounds like this is your whole thing is just a caveat so far, which is, right. And I'll jump on, which is, yes, they're all nightmares. And many of them are getting much more frequent and worse.
But earthquakes, man. I mean, first of all, they come from in the earth, inside the earth.
This is like expert level seventh grade science class.
I'm just saying, doesn't that like give you a primal fear?
Yeah. Yes. Look, anything that comes from inside the earth or I guess from the sky or from space, like Armageddon, still my favorite movie, but it's complicated.
Very
There's a lot going on there, you know? But other things that give me primal fear, like peeing on a moving vehicle, like a plane, or you know, I don't mean on it, but like in a bathroom when you're on it.
Right.
There's just so many strangers. Anyways, keep please.
I feel the same way about that, by the way.
Is he presenting a diorama as well, just like in seventh
grade? Yeah, I know. Like I said, it's not good that it's, we're so lucky this isn't
video.
We're
working on the visual aspect.
Continue. This is going great.
All right. So anyway, it just, you know, it just makes me feel so small.
Yes.
So, all right, here we go. Here's how an earthquake works, as far as I can tell. Okay. This is going to be good. So there's these giant plates. They're sitting on top of Earth's mantle and they're constantly moving around super slow.
Super slow. Josh, like I heard once it was like speed of fingernails growing or something, right?
Well, right. Yeah. They, you know, they vary, but in general, yeah, that's a good benchmark.
Whoa. Okay. That is insane. How is that possible?
That's what we want you to explain, Brian.
Right. Okay. All right. So anyway, they're either pushing against each other really slow, or sometimes away from each other really slow, or just rubbing side to side. And that's what causes an earthquake.
And that's how I made my third baby. But you love them so much. I do. Sometimes even the most of all of them. But
you. All right. So earthquakes can also happen on fault lines, right? Like the San Andreas, which I'm like 10,000% sure is right under our feet here in LA.
Do you remember we had the earthquake during the one podcast? And,
yes.
And Teddy the Wonder Dog didn't even fucking wake up.
So weird and scary, very scary.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Anyways, it's. I don't think it's right under us. I think it's a little further up the mountains. But regardless, your fucking motorcycle is going to drop right down in that baby.
Thanks.
Anyways.
Dickhead.
Anyways, continue.
Yeah. Very helpful.
Right. It's not here. Californians
close.
Worry about it all the time, but are they everywhere?
Yeah. Well, you know, they're. Listen, it depends on where you are, right? Not everybody's worried about earthquakes, thank God.
Okay.
So like the worst area is the Ring of Fire, which is like Chile up through South America to the West Coast, under our feet, sort of, out to Japan, Alaska, et cetera. Not cool. And then number two is from Indonesia, the Java Islands. and it goes like to the Himalayas, through the Mediterranean, to the Atlantic.
Right. And that's, I mean, I think the plates pressing together is actually what causes mountains and such too, right? Like the Himalayas, that's why they're so big.
That's how mountains are made. all right. So anyway, so then there's a third major one in the Mid-Atlantic Range. That's kind of self-explanatory. And, you know, so anyway, point is earthquakes, they're the things of nightmares, you know, and we need to be prepared. Feel one coming, get under a desk or something. Don't go outside.
Right.
Or what if?
Right.
What if we knew they were coming? Okay, that's the question, right? The game changer. I mean, I know I would feel a lot better.
All right, so with that for some context, I cannot wait to hear Josh just destroy that whole thing.
Yeah.
Let's double down on and dig into our question of the week, which is, Josh, man, is there a chance we can predict the big one? Have you, I guess you, not we specifically.
Don't include us.
Brian didn't. Job interview failed. Have we cracked these things?
So there's a caveat there, right? So I want to define prediction.
Yep.
Prediction, we can't predict earthquakes, okay? Really what we are doing, this is early detection. So similar, but different, right? Prediction implies that we know that it's going to happen before it happens. Mm-hmm. Really what we are doing is detecting these earthquakes so fast that we can actually outrun them. So that's what we've been able to figure out. And technology has allowed us to be able to detect these earthquakes. So it's post-earthquake, pre-shaking. So just like you see lightning before you hear thunder, this is the same theory. We're actually detecting these sound waves. And before, right, we're detecting them at the speed of light. Okay. They're moving at the speed of sound. So if we can detect these earthquakes at the speed of light and we can send that warning ahead of the earthquake faster than it's propagating, that's early warning. And that's actually exactly what we're doing.
That's amazing. And you are already doing the thing that we try to do, which is, again, I always hate to use the word dumb it down for our audience and for Brian.
Sorry.
But more take it down to its basis level so we can start with, again, the context of what these things are. And you said an important thing. You said there's the earthquake and then the shaking, because like lightning and thunder. So, again, using the Superman analogy,
yes,
or you know, the Rock flying around his helicopter in San Andreas, because he's a pilot too. The earthquake is not what is splitting open under our feet, or is it?
So the earthquake is actually, so, you know, we're talking about the slow creep of these faults. And that's what the San Andreas is doing. Mm-hmm. What the earthquake is the plates are moving, mm-hmm. but where they're actually touching, they're not moving. So it's building up this resistance like in a rubber band, and finally all of a sudden it releases and it is like it's unzipping California theoretically.
Oh, that's
with no happy ending.
So, right. Oh wow. I like that. Well done. Well done. Wow. Okay.
All right.
When you joked about, you know, your dog just being lazy and not knowing anything, but you know, we hear about animals and dogs in particular going just freaking nuts
right.
before an earthquake.
Right.
And what's funny is they're actually hearing these P waves. They're sensing these P waves. That's what these sensors, the 900 or so sensors we have on the West Coast right now, are listening for the same thing. So theoretically, dogs and animals, to some degree, have been doing earthquake early warning their whole lives.
Teddy clearly hasn't been.
You think maybe some cats too? Teddy's. Probably dogs and cats. Probably cats too. I'm just getting guessed there.
Well. All right.
So, and why haven't we been able to, not predict, but early detect these things before? What makes earthquakes so different if the root of the cause is like moving so slow?
I mean, obviously there is, again, to caveat, we realize they're inside the Earth. So unlike hurricanes, we can't see them either with our eyes when they're coming or with satellites. Again, asking the dumbest question, why don't we have something like radar under the crust in the crust? I'm not trying to sound stupid, but I want to dial it down to understand how far you've come.
Yeah. Well, it's, you know, it's cost prohibitive. There's only so much that they can spend and only so many resources that the federal government has allocated and the universities and also private funding. The Gordon Betty Moore Foundation were a huge piece of building the preliminary proof of concept system that we had running like 7 years ago. So it's both funding and just the general resources and the support behind the network.
So let's take it back even further. So you talked about they can only put so much in, and Brian and I have been discussing one morning one of my biggest peeves and reading about how much, you know, the U.S. has spent in natural disaster damage funding over the past 18 months versus what we spend proactively. But right. at the same time, we'll get to that. Let's back up. Tell us exactly how this system works, literally to what is in the ground, and then where is it sending a signal? How does it send it? How do we react it? How does it get to your system? Tell us that.
So when an earthquake happens, right, mm-hmm. that happens at the epicenter. Now that can be close to the surface. It can be super deep. At the epicenter, right, that's measured as magnitude. Okay. We always hear that. We always hear 4.7. It was a 6.7,
right.
You know, the Northridge. It's a, you know, it's an 8.0, something like that. That's what people are very familiar with and how we measure the size of an earthquake at its source. Okay. Now, when that earthquake happens, we talked a little bit about this. It releases the P waves and the S waves. They're traveling roughly the speed of sound. P waves are faster than the S waves. So those P waves are emitted first and those reach the sensors first. Okay. So those 900 or so sensors on the West Coast are actively listening for those P waves. Three of those sensors have to detect those P waves. With that, they can estimate the size of the earthquake. They can estimate how bad the shaking is going to be, those S waves that are following the P waves, how bad those are going to be. They can triangulate where the earthquake is. They can roughly say how deep it is. With that data, that in itself is sort of the earthquake early detection piece. That's then shared with early warning labs with us, and we actually model out the how bad the shaking is going to be, not at the epicenter. We care about where our users are. So whether it's our app users, mm-hmm. our commercial users, the buildings, the high rises we have this installed in, we can tell them exactly how bad the shaking is going to be when those seismic waves reach their location. And we can tell them within a second or two how long they have until those strike their location. Now, I mentioned magnitude before because I wanted to bring up intensity. It's a modified Mercalli intensity scale, MMI. It's a scale of 1 to 10. Mm-hmm. That's the number That is how bad the shaking is going to be estimated at the end user's location.
That's so the number we always hear about.
Well, no, sorry. So the magnitude is what you hear.
Oh, okay.
The MMI is the new earthquake early warning number that you would see, and you can set thresholds at. So that's a scale of 1 to 10.
Oh, interesting.
So, while you know, you guys are in Studio City, right? So let's say there could be a 8.0 down by the Salton Sea, and you guys could get, you know, let's say 40, 50 seconds of warning, but your intensity could be anywhere from, who knows, 5, 6, 7. And that's unrelated to the.
Is that going to be confusing for folks since they've grown up their whole lives hearing like, oh, anything above a 6 or 7 is going to be pretty decent, above a 9 and we're all toast, below a 5, don't get out of bed.
That's a great question. And the answer to that is, we've dumbed it down as much as possible. So with the modified Mercalli scale, it actually has a verbal description for each level. So it goes from weak to strong to violent to extreme. Mm-hmm. So people can get sort of a general sense of how bad the shaking is going to be.
Right. So is that when you send out an alert, does it just have the number, or does it have both of those things?
Has the number, it has that, has the countdown.
Gotcha.
Oh, that's great.
Okay, that's really interesting. So what has, you talked about funding, of course, you know, allows for all of these things. What has changed technology-wise? What has changed? Because I don't know the time frame technology-wise for how this has evolved to be able to develop a system like this for someone to finally say, like, we could start to roll this kind of thing out and have it actually work.
The past few administrations, the sort of the funding for these programs has been roughly the same. For currently, there was an ask for a significant amount. It was proposed to actually completely cut the system. Perfect. However, you know, we had the representative support and the proof of concepts and the implementations to show the success of the system. And to date, actually, with the omnibus bill that was passed, the funding for the shake alert, the earthquake early warning system, was actually doubled.
Whoa.
From last year. And that's now incredible. We have state and local cities and states forking over millions, if not tens of millions of dollars to support and sort of match the federal funds. So we've really been building up momentum the last sort of 3 years on the government side to continue to expand this network across the rest of the United States and continue to increase the sensor saturation up in the Pacific Northwest and, of course, Nevada, Alaska, Hawaii, sort of the next states to come on board. So it's been kind of in this sort of slow burn, consistent development over, I mean, 7 years or so. Mm-hmm. Now it's production ready, and it's groups like us, partners with the USGS, are actually making this commercially available to, you know, hospitals, high-rise buildings, schools, things of that nature.
So you have a public-private partnership, which is always, I think, helpful. There's so many people that are like, NASA should do everything. And there's people like, SpaceX, NASA's dead, SpaceX should do it, and don't realize how much the two depend on each other.
Right.
Much that will continue to be the case going forward, because, you know, private companies can have, a lot of them are public. I mean, SpaceX is a publicly owned company. That's different than a public partnership where it's a state or federal government. Or local, where, you know, in most cases, when the big numbers come about, it's really only a federal government that can pony up that kind of cash. I'm curious, let's start here, and then I do want to shift, because it's important to do so. But what is your number? What is the funding number to blanket the West Coast for you to not sit back? Because it sure doesn't sound like you're the kind of guy who sits back and rests on his fucking laurels.
Nah.
But to go like, all right, West Coast, cover. Like, what kind of funding number are we talking about?
So
I realize it's probably a more complicated question, but I'm super curious.
So we're at 20 plus million for the next year, right? That's double of what was hoped for, which is great. Yes. It's still short of the total amount that we want to have the Rolls-Royce of this system, right? So let's just say we're getting a brand new Ford F-150, okay, which is going to get the job done, and it's going to work really well.
Mm-hmm.
The build out, I mean, it's a big process and it's a long process. But the good news is we have really good sensor density in the populated areas, so we can actually have some really good success with the earthquake early warning. So the solid number is something that the USGS is managing and dealing with and doing a great job, and I think they're happy with the funding that they have. It could always be more, but thank gosh it's not less. So we're in a really good spot.
Okay, that's interesting. But again, like, you know, if you had your druthers, and you know, you can say this to the NIH, to anybody, you know, if you were like, look, we could roll this out if we had the dough to do it. We can make all those people who read the New Yorker article, God, was that 2 years ago now, feel just a little bit better. You know, what kind of funding are we truly talking about to really roll that out?
The specific number, I don't know offhand, to be completely honest. I know, roughly $57 million to have like the ideal rollout.
Okay. I mean, that's what I mean. Like I just, for myself, part-time super nerd, and our listeners, you know, we just didn't have any contact. So like that's just important for folks when they're looking and thinking about how they can activate and ask their congresspeople for these type of things.
Yeah, 100%.
Interesting.
57 okay. million.
So here's 57 million. So here's where I want to pivot a little bit. So we've got listeners in 64 countries. Not everywhere can afford a system like that. Clearly, right. America hasn't even put forth the money to do it. And yes, it's all newish, of course. And there's so many competing venues for that money and very legitimate needs. But I mean, unlike a satellite, right, for a hurricane that can turn a couple degrees and look at a different part of the planet, these systems need local, regional build out, right? And that's often where they need the most. So China, Indonesia, these are all very different countries, but the point is they're not a wealthy country like this. I mean, China is in some respects, in some ways, not at all. China, Indonesia, Syria, I mean, good Lord, Haiti, Iran, Pakistan, Peru, some of the most deadly earthquakes with little resources, if any, to build a system like this.
Mm-hmm.
And aside from India, Haiti and Indonesia, you know, those are basically where the worst disasters have been body count wise. Most of those go pretty far back though. But at the same time, aside from Haiti and Indonesia, obviously, which are both in the past, I guess Indonesia's with 2004, so 15 years or so. But even since then, you know, populations have exploded. Body count only theoretically rising.
Right.
So if it costs, you know, almost $60 million to cover the West Coast of the US, which is a large landmass, how do we, I don't even know the question to ask, I guess, you know, what is the method for looking at these countries and finding a proactive way to build them out there? Is there international funding and appetite for this sort of thing?
So that's a great question. So we've been involved with the United Nations, the UNISDR and UNESCO. We've participated, we've spoken at some of their global events, and they have a earthquake early warning, a hazard early warning working group. And we've been sharing this, you know, the concept and the information together with Mexico and Japan. There are other sort of two of the major countries that have some sort of an earthquake early warning system. So we've been working on kind of spreading that message and helping people understand how it can be implemented on the you know, the global scale. UC Berkeley has done some very cool research and development with Deutsche Telekom, where they've actually created a cool application which can do crowdsourced earthquake early warning using the accelerometers on phones.
Oh God. I mean, it's,
whoa.
You know, it went from, look at this cool game where you can pick out the differences in the pictures, to you can flag a car, do an Alzheimer test and crowdsource earthquake advance notice. It's
amazing.
Yeah. Oh, great.
Yeah. And we're very fortunate to have Berkeley as one of the collaborative universities, right? You know, so the U.S. can afford to have, you know, $20,000-$30,000 sensor sites in each location. It can be as expensive as that.
How much ground is it? I'm sorry to interrupt again. It's so fascinating. How much, again, to paint a picture, how much ground does a sensor cover? What kind of area are we talking about?
So that's a good question. I don't know the answer to that question. That would be something that I'd have to ask Caltech and the scientists that are 10 times smarter than I am.
Easy.
But, so 100 times smarter than me.
And again, that's another great part about the public-private partnership, right? We came into it with the software, the technical, the hardware, the commercialization expertise, the tech expertise that theoretically, they didn't have, but they have the smartest scientists, which we would never be able to get. That's one of the really cool things about this public-private partnership that you kind of talked about earlier. But kind of in general with the seismometers, they need to be spread out along the fault lines, right? Mm-hmm. So they need to be within proximity to detect the earthquake soon enough.
Mm-hmm.
You get an early warning to the populated areas. So typically you'll see more sensor density in the populated areas. And then as you kind of get out, just strategically placed mm-hmm. by the faults to be able to pick up those P waves. So distances can really vary.
Sure.
Right? You can have sensors. We have sensors in the US that pick up earthquakes in Mexico, right? I mean, way right. across the border.
How big are, I'm trying to picture one of these sensors. Yeah, I mean, is it a pencil in the ground? Is it a cell phone tower? What does this thing look like?
It's funny. We were actually just looking at some decommissioned ones this morning. They can be anywhere from the size of.
Please say a dinosaur.
And if it could be shaped
unfortunately,
like a dinosaur,
actually, fortunately, much smaller than that, right? A size of like a, I think like a can of soup to like the size of a football.
Got it. Okay, so you're not really running into like eminent domain issues then
right.
with these things necessarily. You're not like, hey, with like the cell phone towers or people going like, I have shitty cell service and people going, but you're not putting it in my backyard. You're like, can I put this can of soup and save your life?
Yeah. Well, that's, I wish we could just say it was just the kid. Unfortunately, we have to have all the telemetry, the power, the IP.
Right.
We have to have a small culvert. It has to be somewhat underground to be shielded from just surface, like, trucks driving by and right. people plowing their fields and stuff like that. So a big portion of the expense is just getting it underground in a good spot with the right telemetry. You know, getting it in basements of buildings and things like that is great. But one of the biggest challenges that we've learned is approval, even if it's just on federal land, is a lot of the environmental approvals that need to happen to be able to get this. And even the USGS has some challenges with that. So that's a hurdle. I mean, it's a measurable hurdle that they have to deal with. Even as, part of the Department of the Interior, they still have right. to deal with a lot of regulations just to get this life-saving tech into the ground.
Sure. Now I'm going to use a buzzword because that's annoying. Is one of the ways that we've been told autonomous cars are going to be so much more reliable and safe in the future is that they are networked together and constantly learning. So if your car breaks short, every other Tesla on the network is going to apply that situation right. and store it in its bank, right? It can only learn. I mean, that's how machine learning works. You train it on a series of images and it learns from them and can apply itself. Is there anything like that going on with these systems at all? Are they smart at all? Is there anything that they can be learning along the way that can constantly be improving itself? Or are they relatively, I don't want to say dumb because clearly not, but you understand what I mean, like not networked, not necessarily learning.
Uh-huh. In a way they're doing that, right? They have algorithms that are processing the seismic data, the waveform data.
Mm-hmm.
It's fairly standard. They'll test it back over all sorts of waveform data and see, okay, that was an explosion or that was, seismicity from an earthquake across the earth that has actually traveled right. through the center of the earth. And they can identify those types of waveforms and are able to filter that out. From my understanding, I don't believe there's any machine learning type processing that's happening right now. But as with other technologies, I mean, I could see that being applicable to earthquake early warning and hopefully in the near future.
Wow,
that's cool. Just send the royalties my way once we get all that cracked in.
So
exactly
from where we are now, how much can we realistically expect a system like this to continue to improve, you know, in response time in the next 5, 10, 20 years and so on?
Yeah, great question. So there is a scientific limit, right, to where we can get this, right? There's a top end of warning time that just physically we can't exceed,
right?
Because, you know, the earthquake is happening and we can only detect it so fast. We can only send an early warning so fast. So there is a top end there.
Sure.
There's room for us to improve this, right? With more sensors, a little bit faster telemetry, faster computing. The computing on our end is about as fast as it's going to get. I mean, you know, maybe we can shave off tenths of seconds, but which really isn't a measure. I mean, there's no benefit to having, you know, 20 seconds or 20.01 seconds, right?
So there's no way to really, like you said, it happens and then we can send the signal, it can compute it and run that algorithm and send the signal as fast as it can, but there's no way to keep stepping back from before it happens, like you said, because it's a buildup in the rubber band. There's no way to start encroaching on that tension. Is there to say, like, it's where, you know, where they're always like, oh, the big one in Los Angeles, San Francisco is way overdue, to make that much more specific as it builds up. There's not like sort of rates of tension where we could be like, it is definitely coming in the next 12 years type of thing.
Yeah. And they've tried to figure out ways to do that. A couple of years ago, I remember there was an earthquake warning issued because of some increased seismic activity. And there was a lot of debate about that as to whether that was, you know, a legitimate warning to have. The only reason that that went out was because there was a slightly higher likelihood that we were going to have a big earthquake due to some seismicity, and that's factual, right? If we have a big earthquake, there is a higher risk of having of that possibly being a foreshock, right? But as time goes by, it's like days, the chance of that just drops drastically. So there's kind of some correlation there, but being able to predict it just still hasn't been a feasible science. And the consensus is that it's impossible, at least right now. And maybe, you know, maybe that could, the like machine learning could, it could be applicable there to try to see if there's a way where we can somehow predict it. But,
right. It's something that we just, and again, this is a really, really shitty, lazy application of machine learning where everyone goes, oh, deep learning, it'll fix everything. It's like, no, fuck it. That's not how it fucking works. It can play Go, and it cannot drive a car. It can drive a car. That one cannot play Go. Like these things do not cross bounds. That's why we don't have general AI. And we may never not. Whoops. That's a double negative. Coffee's working.
Hey, we got it in.
But at the same time, you do look at this and go, but there is data in this. And there is, like, even if there isn't an earthquake or a big one at any point, that tension is there. And one of the benefits of machine learning, as far as we can understand, is it is built to train itself on reams of data that we, as just beyond our ability, our bandwidth, and our comprehension. And sometimes that gets to, you know, as it is with DeepMind and Go, to black box status where we don't know why or how it did that, just that it did, and we like the answer. But I am just curious if there's some way to just to gather that and apply it in some way to almost, you know, backdate it before these things happen.
Right. Big data, you know, looking at the seismicity before, you know, our last couple of big earthquakes. So trying to process that and look at, you know, maybe some similarities and things like that at even just backlogs of data
anything,
that have just been stored.
Anything.
Yeah.
See like
if there's
you
anything.
Said, yeah. Even if it takes 3 seconds on it, it's like, it's 3 seconds, man. That's a baby out of a crib. You know, I'm just curious. It's almost like health records where you've got, I mean, they're their own nightmare because of doctor's handwriting and lack of standardization and things like that. Earthquakes don't have doctor's handwriting. But, you know, the analogy is thus that you've got 50 years of health records. And the idea is, assuming they were all legible and standardized, you push those into machine learning. And then you're also taking, so it's learning everything that's ever come out in every medical journal. And then, so it can find, you know, the patterns there, but you're also giving it the live data. Everybody that's coming into a hospital at any given time, every new journal article, so that it can cross-reference all of those things to say, like, oh, you've got cancer. And this works for this people with your genetic makeup in this part of the country that's been exposed to these environmental impacts. And I don't know. It's hope. It's putting too much faith in technology, which is always not a mistake, but it's a panacea. But I'm just curious.
Yeah. You know? And it's possible. That's absolutely possible. Until we try, we just really don't.
Sure. No, but again, don't. That requires a lot of resources and it's entirely theoretical. Right. So
yeah.
Gotta happen. You're clearly doing your part, Josh.
Ish.
Just a little bit. Are there what are things these other countries that, you know, don't have tremendous resources like ours need to be doing in the meantime? Is it housing, education? Are there, do these countries have Josh Bashams?
Earthquake retrofitting. Can we clone you? I mean, do they actually... These guys learn from their disasters, unlike us?
So I'll unpack that question a little bit, right? It's like, what can they do if they don't have the resources, and kind of what are they doing? So Dr. Lucy Jones, super brilliant, way smarter than I am. She was part of the USGS. She's kind of coined the earthquake lady. She's moved on and she's doing some other fantastic things with her foundation.
Is she a different lady and not earthquake lady?
Well, I
how many monikers does she have?
She plays the cello, I think. So she,
cello lady? It's just, it's too much. You know, these people.
Very smart. I couldn't play a musical instrument to save my life.
Same.
But she brought up some really good points when she was speaking on behalf of the USGS. And as she still talks about the kind of earthquake hazards today, you know, these other countries that have some semblance of an earthquake early warning system, they actually built them and invested in them because they had, a shit ton of people die in an earthquake. And the United States is the first place that's actually being proactive and building the system without losing hundreds, if not tens of thousands of people's lives. So, you know, we're very fortunate about that. Mexico, you know, they lost a lot of lives in some big earthquakes, and that's why they created their system. Same with Japan. Building codes are also very, very important. Something very interesting about the codes, at least in California, they're not really designed to protect injuries and like crushing deaths per se from like falling building stuff inside.
Yeah.
The stuff is a very technical term, if you haven't noticed.
Use the Brian term.
The building codes are actually designed to just prevent a collapse of the building.
Yeah.
So there can be huge, tremendous, crazy damage. Panels can fall. Internal walls can collapse. You know, the AC unit can come through the ceiling and crush you while you're sleeping. The mirrors can come fall down and just cut you. The windows can be blasted out.
This is great.
As long as the building doesn't collapse, hey, code worked. So that's why early warning is super important. Even with the crazy good building codes we have here, or the seismic codes that we have here and the retrofit, rules.
Sure.
Is it crazy?
It's going to prevent roughly half the injuries through some of these academic studies they've done. That's what they've determined, which is huge, even with the crazy good building codes we have. So if you look at other countries, which don't have either the resources or the government infrastructure to enforce and check and do all these building codes, that's like a double whammy, right? It's tough. Where do you spend your resources? It would be great if we can prevent the building from collapse, because that prevents a lot of the death, the crushing death. But it's just, how do they allocate the resources? And it's a tough question. Definitely a tough question. And that's where kind of this technology that Berkeley was working on is really fascinating, because everyone's got a smartphone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The proportion to Android to Apple is actually, it's more Apple. It's higher proportion to Apple in the United States, but overseas, the Android is pretty significant. Yeah. And that's really what their technology works on the Android stack much better. And, you know, you could roll this out. Like, if you bake this into the phone and it's just part of the phone, boom, you have the millions of sensors. It's not nearly as accurate. It's not as much warning time. There's a lot of challenges with it, but
sure. But it's something.
Exactly.
Well, and that's what they've done. You know, like Apple, you know, in rolling out their health kit and the research kit stuff over the past few years, you know, and they're doing these studies with Stanford, and they've now enabled it so other with the kits, with the frameworks that other clinics can roll out their own studies. you know, you have these research scientists and doctors, you know, maybe one of the big ones is Parkinson's and another one is heart studies, going, my studies, the way I grew up and the way my lab has always run is, if we can get 100 people, it'll cost a few million dollars. Yeah. I have to get those people here. It's incredibly isolated. And all of a sudden, not all of a sudden, I mean, Jesus, with years of behind the work, scenes work on these systems and hiring an infinite number of professional scientists, people who understand both the technology and the medical science, all of a sudden they give a speech on stage and say, hey, when you download this software tomorrow, there's a billion devices that can be used to run a test to see if you might be prone to Parkinson's. And it's the same thing, maybe not as accurate, but holy shit, the data that, by the way, is now it's almost free. Like it's incredible. It's just a game changer.
It is fascinating, right? And you're getting a good, through that collection of data, right? They're getting all sorts of different data points as opposed
much broader swath.
And like in a clinical study, it's okay. It's that snapshot in time when they're there and they're being analyzed. This is, you know, crowdsourced and multiple times of the day. It's really fascinating.
Okay, so let's turn this to our listeners. Let's quickly review what should we have no early warning system we need to do when we feel an earthquake coming.
Okay, so I want to make sure I heard that right. So what should they do without an early warning?
Yeah, so assuming they've got no early warning system, because again, it's not everywhere by any stretch. No early warning system, you're a regular person, you feel an earthquake coming. What are the three things they should do?
Statistically, the very best thing that you can do, and what's sort of the industry standard, is to drop, cover, and hold on. So it's to get underneath a sturdy piece of furniture, mm-hmm. and to hold on to it and really just ride out the shaking. That's the very best thing you can do. One of the more dangerous things that you shouldn't do is run outside. Every time we have a big earthquake, people are killed by falling debris, whether it's glass, you know, 50-pound window, pieces of glass popping out of the windows, to bricks and facade and gargoyles falling off of buildings. People are killed all the time with that.
Who has gargoyles?
I lived in a building that had gargoyles. They were cool.
In my world, Quinn.
Oh, Jesus.
Hey,
Santa Monica is so weird. Jesus.
I spend a lot of time in Santa Monica, Josh, and I like it.
You would.
Wait. I have a question real quick. So say that sounds a lot like what you should do if you're like in a pretty, I don't know, in a city, for example. Mm-hmm. If you live somewhere, you know, where you're like on a lot of land, there's not a lot of buildings around, would it make more sense to get out of like the first floor of your house and be in the open so that like that your house doesn't fall on you? Like anything, you know what I mean?
Well, That's a great question. So this
Brian, you're assuming there is no debris to fall on you. You're saying,
yeah, like what if, right? Like here, I could see there's tall buildings
everywhere.
Some creepy place
where you're surrounded by no buildings, no trees, no power lines.
Creepy. It's just not a city. There's places. I have friends that live in these places.
Okay.
I'm curious.
So you know, this kind of goes back.
Those
7 years ish that I was teaching the CERC curriculum. One of the big things was to kind of talking about different types of buildings, a safe place to be for earthquake, etc. So you might be surprised to know that actually one of the safest structures to be in during an earthquake is a single family wood frame home. That wood actually moves and flexes with the earthquake.
Right.
And pending the house doesn't bounce off the foundation, which typically they do, but they typically stay in one piece and they're just kind of tweaked. Right. You don't want to live in it afterwards, but they don't collapse and crush you to death.
Okay.
So there's, you know, we try to have a catch-all piece of advice, right, is to drop, cover, and hold on to have the greatest good, the greatest benefit. You know, different scenarios, right? If you are in an unreinforced masonry building that's not up to code, that isn't designed to not collapse, you know, you have other stuff to worry about, right? Is that building going to collapse on you? We don't want to tell people to run outside because you may have 10 seconds, 5 seconds, or a minute of warning. It just varies per event.
Right.
It's tough. It's tough to say. Now, I can say I live on the top floor of a building, and that's by design. So if this building does collapse, I have the ceiling on me, the roof, mm-hmm. and not five stories of the building on top of me if I was on the first floor.
that makes sense. Okay, so let's assume we do get an alert. We're in one of your fancy systems. First of all, I mean, and I know it totally changes, but depending on distance and how strong these things are, how much time might I have?
So time and distance really is sort of the algorithm for that. It varies. So if you were downtown LA and we had the San Andreas, the quote unquote, the big one happen where it ruptures down by the Salton Sea, you get roughly 57 seconds of warning. You guys are in Studio City. Your warning time would probably be a little bit less, but roughly around the 50-ish seconds of warning.
So what about like somebody in San Francisco or somebody in Portland or Seattle?
Yeah. So they actually released, good timing for that question. They released something called the haywired scenario, which is their big one in Northern California. For that scenario, San Francisco, it looked like they were getting like 20 seconds of warning for the haywired fault rupture. Okay.
With that much of a warning, which doesn't sound like much, but again,
that's wild.
You can get a baby out of a crib.
Yeah, yeah.
Should I do anything different than get under the table? Or am I still just using that time more efficiently?
Two pieces of that answer. First piece is, no, you do exactly the same thing. Drop cover and hold on. In fact, our mobile application, when we release that, hopefully before the end of the year, to the public, that it literally, if it's over a certain intensity, it'll actually show on the screen, drop cover, hold on.
Gotcha.
Oh, wow.
That's helpful.
Yeah. Where we're actually saving more lives and preventing more catastrophic damage is death.
God, this guy likes dinosaurs.
We have our commercial side of this where we actually integrate with an entire high rise. So we actually put that building in safe mode. Whoa. So we slow and stop the elevators. And we open those doors at the closest floor, because in San Francisco, the stat was about 20,000 people will be stuck in the elevators. And unfortunately, after a big earthquake, what follows that is the firestorms. So fire. So you're just a smoke piece of meat at that point if you're stuck in an elevator.
Jesus.
So we're preventing hopefully about 20,000 people getting stuck in elevators. We open vehicle gates. We open fire station doors to prevent the fire trucks from getting stuck inside and the building collapsing on them, which they had happened in Northridge. We are slowing and stopping all LA Metro trains.
Wait, is that actually built out? So the three subway cars that go around LA, you're actually integrated.
There's going to be more.
All of them. All 100 cars.
That's fascinating. I actually had no idea. I mean, cause right now that's the sort of thing. I mean, people, the app will come out, everybody will get it, but that's the sort of thing where I feel like people will actually get off their ass, and we're going to get to this in 1 second, actually. And I think that makes this very compelling, is to call their building owner or call their congressperson, their local councilman, and be like, hey, motherfucker, you know, integrate this thing and save this many lives I'm not a kebab.
Exactly. And when you mentioned earlier, you know, you wanted actionable items that people can do, the best thing your listeners can do is, if they live in an apartment building, a condo tower, or if they work in a high rise, is to ask management, ask whoever deals with infrastructure and the fire alarm and all that stuff, why don't we have earthquake early warning? That will get it in their building. I guarantee it.
Okay. And we're going to get really specific here. So when their building owner is like, you want me to fix your air conditioning? You want an earthquake?
That's exactly what a building owner sounds like. This is why.
Your lights don't work. And he waves you off and is like, go fuck yourself. Do you have like a specific piece of paraphernalia to give those people that is angled to them? Like literally, where can our people print these things out or email this to your landlord type of thing? Do we have that? Can we create that?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we can get you basically a one pager. That they could send out.
That'd be so great.
That would be tremendous. So assuming we have a few landlords there right now, like what the fuck? Why just hit me with a bus? What's it gonna? Obviously, it's different per building or subway, whatever. But what are we looking at cost wise and integration wise to do something like that?
Depending on the size of, let's say it's an apartment or a condo or like a floor of an office building, it can be, you know, dollars to tens of dollars a month for that unit, right? It's very, very low cost to get it set up for a facility. It's very cost effective. And that, you know, once management understands that and they actually see, I mean, we have ABC, did a special on us a few months ago, and they actually found just there was this woman walking through that lived in the building. They said, hey, you know, you have earthquake early warning. Why do you guys like this in your condo building? She said, I left a competing building. I sold my unit and I bought this unit here because they had earthquake early warning. And we're talking like $1 million units, you know, $1,000 HOA, right? I mean, this is like a very nice building. And people are starting to actually use that as a decision factor for where they are. I mean, if you have 200 employees on the floor of a high rise and you're looking for new space, shit, employees would love to have an office that has earthquake early warning. So that may be a deciding factor.
So it stops and opens the elevators. What else does it do?
So it plays audible warning throughout the building speaker system. So we can get that drop cover hold on benefit.
Can it be like Alexa? Can you get Samuel L. Jackson to be like, run, motherfucker, run?
I would love to have a celebrity voice for this.
I want it customizable in my building.
Yeah. Right, right. Wow. And when did the LA Metro thing roll out?
That's been live for over 2 years.
Fascinating. What about BART in San Francisco? Anything like that?
Actually, with CBS Morning News, if your viewers just want to Google it, LA Metro earthquake warning CBS, there's a great, we had a helicopter, we had all sorts of crazy stuff. We did a full scenario for CBS. We actually slowed and stopped all the trains in LA with our system, which is pretty cool to see.
Boy, Brian, if you'd done your research, we could have found out all of this.
Hey, Context 101 with Professor Brian was very informative.
I know, it takes a lot out of you. Well, shit, that is really compelling, man. So besides their specific selfish needs in their own building and subway trains and elevator cars, what can everyday folks do to support building this greater early warning system in their region?
They can talk to the representatives. They can say, you know, thank you if you voted yes to increase the funding. And if you didn't, you need to follow up next year, make sure that the funding levels at least stay the same or are increased on the federal level. And with city and state representatives, same thing. Say, you know, we want this earthquake early warning. We worry about our kids. We worry about them in school. That is aside from asking for it at work or where they live, you know, telling representatives, I want you to support this. You work for me. I want you to support this funding for the earthquake early warning system. And us as Early Warning Lab, we get none of that federal funding. I mean, we're privately funded, so we're not getting any of that money, right? This is just helping us get that data from our partners and to be able to then pass it on to end users.
Everybody wins, basically.
Yep, everybody wins.
But your commercial side, that's interesting. Do you guys do like schools or anything like that? I mean, that's where people I feel like are going to be like, yeah, whatever the dollar is.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. We have a great project that we're working on. We're donating it for LA Unified School District, right? We're helping them roll out to a couple of their schools in the hopes that we can find some outside funding to get all 1,200 just like 1,275 schools equipped with this. Cause myself as a, you know, first responder, I worry about the kids a lot and I want to see this in the schools. So we're working with them, covering the cost to do that. And hopefully we can find some grant funds or some private funds to help us roll out to the rest of those schools in need. So we're working different avenues of this and just trying to get it out there as much as we can.
That's awesome. We might have to talk a little more offline about that. So just to sort of quickly summarize what our listeners and people who don't want to die in an earthquake can do in general, and that is to get down, get cover, and hang on if they feel it coming. And if they do get an alert and do down your load your app, or they are in one of these buildings or subway cars or elementary schools, do the same damn thing. You just have 10 more seconds to do it. And then it is talking, if you are in one of these potentially affected areas, to your local folks, your local representatives, about saying, you know, have you supported the funding? I mean, you can do your research and find out if they have, but if not, ask them. And depending on what their answer is, you know, funding should at least stay the same, if not more. It is always better to be proactive than reactive. These things, like you said, they're going to happen. We're not going to stop them, but it would be great if fewer people fell down the hole or were crushed or were turned into kebabs. And then privately, yeah, you know, there's commercial systems like this, like yours out there, that can be integrated into buildings and schools and subways and things like that. So it's really cool to hear that sort of progress coming forward. I think that's it. Did I miss anything?
No, that was it. Right on point. Appreciate
it. Sounds pretty good. All right. We have a last few questions that we like to ask everybody. Sort of a lightning round, if that sounds good, Josh.
Sure. Let's do it.
All right. First one. We'll fix this at some point. It's not a lightning round question.
The lightning round starts after this question.
Son of a... When was the first time in your life when you realized you had the power of change or the power to do something meaningful?
The first day I walked into the disaster, the CERT training program, I thought, wow, I mean, I just need to donate a little bit of my time and I could save someone's life. That was huge. That was huge for me.
That's awesome. And by the way, like, again, doing nothing to contribute to humanity like you are, but you can get that feeling as simply as taking a CPR course or a first aid course, guys, especially if you have kids. It's so easy. They're free in a lot of places. It's a couple hours out of your day and you might never use it, but man, if you could, even if it's not a disaster, you know, anything like that, it just makes a difference to have people more better informed and better prepared.
Yes, 100%.
All right, next one. Who is someone in your life that has positively impacted your work in the past 6 months? And you can't say Brian.
As bad as you want to, Josh, you can't.
You know, my family. It's just, you know, anytime it's a rough, you know, a rough week, a rough day, a rough year, right? You know, in the tech community, it's always up and down, right? It's a roller coaster. But the one constant I've had is my family. It's always been, you know, there for me to help support, listen, words of encouragement. And I became an uncle and got to hold my nephew a couple of weeks ago and see my parents be grandparents. That was just, you know, just amazing. And that just gives me, you know, excitement to move forward.
That's incredible, man.
I love that, man.
Congrats on being an uncle.
Thank you.
Hey,
everyone should do it.
I'm an uncle. I love it.
Awesome. Man. It's really awesome, actually.
Congratulations, Brian.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it. Josh, how do you take in your news?
And I mean more like not like on the toilet, like what vehicles do you use?
If you want to tell us where, that's deliver. Fine. Also,
how do you read the news?
That's a good question. I cut the cable probably 2 years ago.
Nice.
So my consumption of the news has gone drastically lower than what it normally would have been, right? Just having news on in the background.
Oh, no, wait. You know what's happened in the past 2 years, though, right?
Oh, yes, of course. Of course.
Oh, my God, Josh, it's terrible.
Oh, no, this podcast isn't going to end the way I thought it was going to end. Oh, man, I don't want to break it to him.
So the Apple News feed is great. You know, I scroll through that. I have a couple, you know, just news sites, aggregators that I thumb through. But I honestly have tried to – I have enough – to worry about, right? Just trying to live my life. It's much lower than it used to be. So
sometimes not a bad thing.
Yeah, probably better.
Stay informed, but don't go crazy, folks.
Yeah, yeah. But Apple News, I've found that to be a pretty good way to aggregate news and read through that in the morning over coffee.
Yeah, yeah. If you could Amazon Prime a book, one book, to Donald Trump, who, by the way, is our president now, if you haven't been keeping up with it.
Right.
What would that be?
So if I was going to send him a book.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. We actually have a book, a list on Amazon Prime, and we're going to throw your recommendation on there, and people can actually send it.
People
to
actually
the White House.
Go on there. They click a button and it 2 days ships it to the White House.
They just must have like a garage full of books.
We've gotten such a wide range from the Constitution to the Little Prince, to people's own books.
Mm-hmm.
Some really awesome, compelling stuff.
I would send him Dr. Lucy Jones's newest book. I think that would provide some real science and some factual basis, and it would educate him on earthquake early warning. It's a little selfish. for my cause, but I would absolutely do that.
It's a pretty good cause, so your selfishness is fine.
there's selfish and there's selfish. What is that book called?
Oh, Lucy Jones's new book. I mentioned
is it called
it.
The Big One?
For some reason, I forgot.
Ask him that.
The Big One.
The Big One. All right.
There we go. Awesome. We will put that in the show notes as well. And on the link, it's right on our website, Trump's Book Club. Great fun. Great fun. Just causing havoc wherever we go. all right. This has been so great. Last one. How would you like to use this podcast to speak a little truth to power? Anything last you want to say that we didn't get to?
Oh, man, you guys did a great job. I mean, I think we really covered everything. I mean, you had the action points for people to help out and find ways to make change. I mean, I think if one last thing, I would just say, you know, do that, right?
Yeah.
Ask if it's at your kid's school, if it's at, you know, if it's in your office building and make sure you voice your support to the representatives who can actually do something about it. That's it. You hit it right on the head.
Awesome.
Sounds pretty good. We got elections coming up here. So that'd be a good thing to look into while we're thinking about who we should put into office.
That's right.
There you go.
Are you, can our listeners follow you online somewhere?
Absolutely. Twitter, Early Warning Lab, because with the S, it's over their character limit for a name.
Oh, we're very familiar with that situation.
Fucking ours is important, not imp. And it's just like,
it's so close.
Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah. So at Early Warning Lab, and we have I don't know if anyone knows what this is, but it's it was called Facebook. We have a Facebook page.
Oh, I'm fairly sure that they think they turned that off.
Yeah, that doesn't work anymore.
Okay.
Yeah.
We'll have to get a MySpace page.
Bad things. It did bad things. Look, for all MySpace's faults, it didn't throw a fucking election.
Yeah, right.
You know. Oh, but actually, no, you know what? Actually, that does remind me. I did forget to mention something. So your listeners can actually go to our website. Mm-hmm. They can Early Warning Labs with the S.com. They can actually sign up on there to be one of the first people invited when we actually do this wide launch of the app. So there is a early access list, and you know, and they'll be able to get kind of the first round of invites for that. So make sure they go there, sign up. There's a little annoying pop-up that'll pop up. They can put their email. If they don't see that, they can go to mobile app on the upper right, and they can also enter their name there too.
Awesome. 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 And what do we think timing is for that?
We're hoping by the end of the year. We have a lot of moving parts, right? We have USGS, universities, cities, state, federal.
Enough with the complaints, Josh. It's like the whole time. That's all it's been.
So he says, so we hope the end of the year, but timelines can change. It could be earlier, but you know, it's possible it could be bleed into next year. But we're pushing hard to have it towards the end of the year.
Big one's coming, Josh. So
it's coming.
Maybe stop doing podcasts and get back to work. Everybody says it's overdue. Hey man, this was great. Thank you so much for your time, Josh.
Thanks so much.
Yeah. Thank you guys.
And for all that you do and you're not far away. So we'll connect here at some point.
Sounds good.
Sure. Awesome. Brian, anything else?
I guess not. See you around Santa Monica.
Yeah, yeah. For sure.
Yeah. Have fun, guys.
If I see you, I'm just going to say smash them, bash them.
Smash them.
All right. I'm getting off the line.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Josh.
All right. Bye, guys.
Bye. Ciao. Thanks to our incredible guest today, and thanks to all of you for tuning in. We hope this episode has made your commute or awesome workout or dishwashing or fucking dog walking late at night that much more pleasant. As a reminder, please subscribe to our free email newsletter at importantnotimportant.com. It is all the news most vital to our survival as a species.
And you can follow us all over the internet. You can find us on Twitter at importantnotimp.
Just
so weird. Also on Facebook and Instagram at Important Not Important, Pinterest and Tumblr, the same thing. So check us out, follow us, share us, like us, you know the deal. And please subscribe to our show wherever you listen to things like this. And if you're really fucking awesome, rate us on Apple Podcasts. Keep the lights on. Thanks.
Please.
And you can find the show notes from today right in your little podcast player and at our website, importantnotimportant.com.
Thanks to the very awesome Tim Blaine for our jamming music, to all of you for listening, and finally, most importantly, to our moms for making us. Have a great day.
Thanks, guys.